Whether life's journey is full of triumphs and victories, riddled with struggles and disappointments, or maybe a little bit of both, it's been our experience that God's compassions never fail, and His faithfulness is new every morning.
Welcome to Hole in the Roof Chronicles with Paul and Jamie Hamilton. Join us as we transparently share stories of God's faithfulness in our lives to be an encouragement to yours. Welcome to our podcast. My name is Paul.
And my name is Jamie.
And we're coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, the crazy weather capital of the United States. It's a wonderful place where yesterday we could get 8 inches of snow, and today it's like 60 degrees.
Yes, I prefer the 60 degrees.
I know you do. And so do our chickens. They seem to enjoy the snow a little bit, but boy, when the sun's out, they're running around in the backyard and clawing at the ground and doing what chickens do.
Yeah. I look forward to warmer weather. I'm definitely not a winter girl whatsoever at all. So, well, today, Paul, I think we are going to embark upon a subject that for some people it might be uncomfortable. But I think that for many people, it's going to be kind of an eye-awakening subject. And I think we're going to kind of talk about the matter of mental health, mental illness, and how that's kind of handled within the church, and kind of how that has hit our family personally.
Well, of course, for a lot of years, telling somebody that you had a mental illness, especially in church, had a very bad stigma to it. You know, you were told you didn't have enough faith. You know, you were told something must be wrong with you. You must have some kind of character flaw, something. And at least now, especially after the pandemic, we've kind of come into this thing where people are more willing to talk about mental health and willing to look at it, you know, as, you know, a mental issue.
I think so. And I think what I've always found somewhat interesting is that, you know, you could look at somebody and say, you know, I was diagnosed with cancer. Or in my personal experience, I could look at somebody and say, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis 10 years ago. Or I fell off a porch and half my back is fused with metal. And people are just all over praying for you and believing God for you and all of that. And it seems like, though, if you begin talking about the mental health struggles that you're dealing with, people just shy away from that. They don't even know what to do with you. And I know for number of years, we found ourselves in that position, especially being in church leadership and even pastoring a church, dealing with those struggles and feeling like you have nobody to talk to about it because you're in it by yourself, because you don't feel like you can talk to anybody because nobody's going to understand, or you're just going to feel rejected by people.
True.
And what a lonely, isolated place to be in. That's just, it's very isolating.
So this is going to be the first of a series, maybe a couple, maybe three, not really sure. We'll see what the Lord leads us. But this is going to be a series of podcasts talking about mental illness, how it affected our life, mine in particularly, and then us as a couple. And the reason we're going to do it as a series is, since these are about, we try to do these about 30 minutes, there is no way we can cover all of this in 30 minutes.
It's a pretty lengthy story, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, why don't you tell the people that are listening, our friends, tell them a little bit about your childhood, how you grew up, about your parents and your family, and that whole scenario.
Okay. Well, I'm the youngest of three children in my family. I have an older brother and an older sister. Honestly, I had a good childhood up until middle school. My childhood prior to that was really good. I had very loving parents. Yes, I was the mischief maker of my family.
There's always one.
Yes. I was the one who usually was in trouble for doing something, saying the wrong thing, doing something. That was me. But I had a good childhood. I mean, I had great parents. My dad was always a very humble man, very loving towards my mother. He was an executive director of a local company here in St. Louis. It was part of a nationwide company. So one of the great things about it was every summer, my dad had to go to a convention somewhere in the United States. It was never in the same place. And we, as a family, would use that as our family vacation. So I got to go to a lot of places as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there was my mom. My mom was very influential in my life. She was a stay-at-home mom. But she was incredibly active in our church. To say the least, there are stories at the church I grew up in of my mother being a force of nature. I remember talking to our pastor once when I was a young adult, and he was like, yes, I always remember your mother. You always knew when she was there because she had to talk to you, and she had to talk to you right now. But she was very, very good at organizing things. She was the director of our vacation Bible school for a long, long time. And she was also the organizer of English classes for the Vietnamese refugees who came over in the 70s. She was also a missionary and went to foreign countries to tell people about Jesus. So she wasn't just a housewife.
She's a very bold woman.
Yes.
Very bold woman. She wasn't afraid to speak her mind, and she wasn't afraid to tell you what she thought.
Yeah. So I grew up in church. To take a phrase from Brandon Lake's Talking to Jesus song, when he makes the comment, you know, well, I was in church Sunday morning and Wednesday night. We can one up you. We were there Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesday night.
And so any other night that something was going on, I'm sure
yes,
you were there.
Yes. Oh, and I know you were too with your family.
Yes.
So I did. I had a very average, normal childhood, very happy, until I hit middle school, probably seventh grade.
And, you know, that's, I think middle school is always a challenging time anyway.
Yeah.
I know for where I went to school, middle school started at seventh grade. So between kindergarten and sixth grade, I was in what they would call an elementary school. And then you transition to a middle school, which at the time was only seventh and eighth grade.
Yeah.
And it was a big, huge change, at least for me, because, you know, when you were in elementary school, you pretty much just stayed in the same classroom all the time. But then once you went to middle school, they expected you to change classes every hour. And that, you know, when you're not used to that, that's kind of that's different. And then just everything else that's going on in your life and in, you know, a middle school kid's body and all that stuff. It's a challenging time.
Yeah. And I was a young man who was, honestly, I was always very anxious, had a lot of anxiety as a kid. Really don't know where that came from. I can't really place, hey, that, you know, this happened at this point, you mm-hmm. know. But I was somebody who was always very nervous, wanted to fit in. And so to be 100% honest with you, I was a class clown. And that got me in a lot of trouble.
And I think things I've read about that, people who act that way, kids that act that way, really that's more of a front mm-hmm. for something that's going on deeper inside. It's just like, it's kind of like they don't know how to deal with the emotions and what's going on inside of them. So they kind of use the humor and the acting like a clown in class as dealing with something that's deeper going on. Did you feel that maybe is what was going on in your life?
I think so. I think it was one of those things, trying to fit in, trying to be liked by people, acting silly. You know, you begin to realize, hey, people are paying attention to you because, you know, you're cracking people up or you're saying the wrong thing. And so I did get in a lot of trouble even prior to middle school. Even in elementary school, I would get in trouble a lot with the teachers for being silly, you know, or saying the wrong thing or, you know, acting up in class. And it's not that I didn't get yelled at by teachers or disciplined by them and so on, but that went to a whole new level in seventh grade. In seventh grade, at the school I was at, because I went to the same school, it was a slightly different than what we've talked about with your experience with elementary school and middle school, I went to the same school building from kindergarten to eighth grade.
Okay.
So, yes, you know, you were in, quote, middle school, and you began the switching of classrooms from one classroom to the other. We would exchange from the seventh grade to the eighth grade classroom, and you'd go back and mm-hmm. forth. So up until seventh grade, I had all female teachers. And in seventh grade and in eighth grade were the first times I had male teachers. And the gentleman who was my seventh grade teacher, he was a very tall man. So even though, you know, I'm 12 years old at the time, this is a very tall man. I mean, he's over 6 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the big handlebar, mutton chop sideburns, something I've always remembered. And he was very stern. You know, I had had stern teachers before, but this guy was really stern.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time where somebody would look at me instead of going, Paul Hamilton, it was Mr. Hamilton. Or, you know, for you, it would be Miss Brown, you know, and that's what he did. He never called you by your first name, ever. It's always Mr. Hamilton, Miss Brown,
That would be intimidating.
Yes.
I've never had a teacher that's like that, but that would be very intimidating to me.
Yes. And he was someone who expected perfection. I expect perfection. I expect the best out of you. And really, he had very little tolerance for class clowns. So to say the least, I self-sabotaged myself a lot in this situation because I was used to being the funny person. And now I'm in a class where that is frowned upon. It became an everyday experience because he was a yeller. He was the first teacher I had that yelled. And I'm not just talking raising their voice. I'd had teachers where, you know, the class is being loud and they would be like, you know, excuse me. You know,
they'd raise their voice to get everybody's attention.
Yeah, I had that. This was his normal mode of talking. And he was somebody that, if he didn't like you, he let you know it.
I kind of think about that cartoon where somebody's yelling and they show the yelling by like hair flying backwards. In other words, there's so much yelling that the cartoon that's being yelled at, their hair goes flying backwards. You know, I kind of, when you've talked to me about this, I've been like, I think that's what I kind of think of. But
yeah. And he was somebody who, like, he was the math teacher for 7th and 8th grade, and he would call you up to the board. He'd say, okay, we're going to do this problem, and he'd call three people up to the board, and you'd start working on the problem, and the minute you made a mistake, he would be like, no, that's wrong. Correct your problem. And you're just like, you know, and so you start getting nervous. Well, the more nervous I got, the more he'd yell,
right,
because I'm screwing up. And,
right,
he'd be like, no, no, you know, have a seat, go sit down. You know, you obviously can't do this. Call the next person up. And I mean, and he didn't just do it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to make that clear. He wasn't like centering me out.
Right.
But to me, it was bad because it set off every anxiety inside of me. I already had enough anxiety as it was. And he would do this. Plus, I would get in trouble, so I'd have to stay in from recess and stay in with him. And I remember very vividly, he would look at me all the time. And see, my sister went to the same school I went to.
Mm-hmm.
So she had the same teacher.
Right.
And he would look at me all the time, and he would say, I cannot believe that you and Jean Ann Hamilton are siblings. She was such a great student. What happened to you?
Ouch.
Yeah. You know, I can't believe you're related to her. And that hurts.
I mean, like, how did that really make you feel?
It hurts. I mean, I'm feeling it right now sitting here.
Right.
You know, you can't see it because we're not on video. I've got tears in my eyes.
Yeah.
And it hurt because it was like, I was trying. You know, this wasn't something where it was like, oh, I'm just a goof off. I don't want to do math. I don't want to do these things. I was trying. I just had this mental block with math, especially fractions. I still to this day cannot do fractions.
I think it's always intimidating. I mean, I even remember when I was in school and the teacher would have you come up to the board. I had never had a teacher yell at me because I couldn't do the problem, but I could feel anxiety if we were called to go to the chalkboard. Yes, the chalkboard, because that's what we used to do a long time ago. But the chalkboard, they would have you do problems. And if I didn't understand it, like, you feel embarrassed. It's not even just in front of the teacher. It's the whole classroom. You're just like, I'm so stupid. And math was not really my strong point. I mean, like, I love geometry. It was awesome. I like all that stuff that had to do with geometry. But I struggled a lot with algebra. I mean, to the point I had to go to a remedial algebra class because it was just so bizarre to me. I could not, I was too much of a concrete thinker and I couldn't get past the idea that, okay, in algebra, somehow we're going to add letters and numbers together and come up with an answer. Like that was so bizarre to me. So I could understand the anxiety of standing up in front of just not even the teacher, but even other kids in the room and just falling apart because you can't do the work.
Well, and then what made it worse was I didn't feel like I had any allies in the situation because I would go home and talk to my mom about this. I'd come home from school. She'd be like, Paul, how was school today? And so on. And I would look at her and I would just say, terrible. I hated it. Mm-hmm. I had a bad day today. Well, why? Well, this happened. You know, he was yelling and screaming at us and everything. And she would turn to me and she'd go, oh, honey, I'm sure he wasn't really yelling. He may have raised his voice, but he probably really wasn't. You know, I know he's a deacon at his church. My mother said that to me repeatedly. And it was almost kind of like a get out of jail free card for him in a way, where if I said something to my mom about how he was treating me, she would go, well, Paul, you know, you're probably exaggerating the situation. You know, he is a deacon in his church.
And I also wonder, too, you've self-admitted that you were kind of a class clown prior.
Yes.
So unfortunately, now something really, really has come up that is an issue that needs to be addressed. But unfortunately, you in the past had been kind of being a clown. And so to your mom and dad's credit, you know, they may have been looking at it as, well, here we go again. You know, Paul's just being a clown and he got in trouble for it.
No, and I agree 100% with you. Yeah. I do. I really do. I'm not blaming my parents. Yes, I was someone who exaggerated a lot. Even as a kid, when I would tell stories, they were big stories, you know. So I had a reputation and that played against it. And I know that. I realize that now as an adult. But it really created that feeling of total helplessness of I have to go to school. I'm doing this 5 days a week. And I vividly remember walking to school by myself because we walked to school because I lived close to it. Every morning walking to school, wishing that I could just teleport to the end of the day. I wish I could just get through to the end of the day without having to, because I knew what was coming. I knew I was going to get in trouble. I knew I was going to get yelled at. I knew I was going to get embarrassed. And I would just disassociate myself from the thing. That's how I learned to deal with
it. Well, explain more about what that is. Like, when you talk about disassociating, what do you mean by that? Especially at that age. Is it just in your thoughts? Were you doing that? Or
yes, it was in my thoughts. It was putting my mind somewhere else.
You know, you didn't have to really deal with what was going on.
I mean, the same thing was still going on. I was still getting yelled at. I was still getting yanked. I would literally just shut down in my mind.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like I physically shut down and, you know, curled up in a corner and cried or anything. But in my mind, it was just like, think of something else. Go somewhere else. Think about the end of the day, how I'm going to get there, how I'm going to, you know, how am I going to get through this? And it became this coping mechanism where if something was very stressful, if somebody was really angry with me, I would just shut down mentally. It would just be like, I don't want to deal with this. You know, I've got to get through the day. And I went through that for the entire seventh grade year. And then the bad thing about it was, like I said, the eighth grade class and the seventh grade class switched classes. Mm-hmm. So we did English, Mr. So-and-so, and we did math with the other guy, you know, my seventh grade teacher. And so I had him in eighth grade too. Mm-hmm. And the same thing would happen in eighth grade. Even though we were a year, we were apart. And then it was just put your head down and just get through the hour.
And so how did that, once seventh and eighth grade were over with, and you began to move into high school, how did that play out in high school? How, what happened in high school with that? Is that, did that same thing continue on? Did you ever feel like you could talk to anybody about what was going on? How did that all play out?
No, I never really talked to anybody about it because, again, when I would mention things like that of, well, this is happening and so on, I felt like, number one, my prior reputation would get the better of me. And two, it was, oh, well, you know, he's a deacon at his church. He can't be doing something like that. And so you got to a point, it was like, why bother telling anybody, mm-hmm. you know? And it morphed into something different in high school because in high school, and it happened very quickly in high school, like within the first week, the way my schedule went was I had my first five classes before lunch. And then my sixth one was after lunch. And because I had a late lunch.
And if I remember right, wasn't that class math?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. The class was math. So here I had all of my subjects ahead of lunch. And then I had my math class. Now, again, I hate math. And after being traumatized for 2 years doing math, the last thing I wanted to do was go to a math class. And I remember very early on, I had a locker right next to one of my childhood friends. And he and I bumped into each other first few days of school, right after lunch. And he's like putting his coat on and so on. And I'm like, dude, where are you going? He goes, I'm done. Yeah, I'm done for the day. I'm going home. And I went, me too. Got my coat, walked out the door with him. And walked to his house. We talked, went from there, stopped at the comic book store, bought a comic book, walked home, and got home at the exact time that I would have gotten home had I stayed for sixth period and rode the bus home. And that became a habit. I just did that every day, you know, because you run into the same friend. This is what we're doing. And I've always had people look at me and go, did you not think of the consequences of that? And to be honest with you, no, I didn't. I literally disassociated myself from the consequences of my actions. And yes, now when I look back on it, do I think about math? Yes. You know, why didn't I want to go to class? Because it was math class. So what do? I find a way to avoid by physically disassociating myself from the class, plus disassociating myself from the circumstances. I mean, yes, I got caught. Mm-hmm. And believe me, for the rest of the school year, I've told this story, my mother showed up at fifth period and walked me to my sixth period class.
I could see this. I could see this happening.
She did this to me for the rest of the school year.
So how did this play out? So you graduated high school. Mm-hmm. I know we've talked a little bit about college. There was some disassociating that went on there.
Yes.
But when do you really feel like this became something that was staring you in the face, like this is something that is serious?
Honestly, I had episodes of it through college, even through jobs that I had where I would tell people I was going to go do this and I'd go to the movies instead of going to this one office and talking to somebody about a sales call. I'd go to the movies and tell them I went because that anxiety would come up in me and it would be like, I don't want to deal with this situation. Mm-hmm. This is uncomfortable. I don't like this. I'm going to go do this.
Right.
And it became way of physically disassociating and mentally disassociating. What really broke was in 1989, my mom had died of cancer in January. I was unemployed. And for that time period from January till April of that year, I was looking for work. I was struggling. There was a lot of things that went on. And it all began to kind of come down crashing upon me in yes. April of 89
yes.
of everything. And I had my first major psychiatric break.
Yeah, it was a super scary time.
Yeah.
It was a scary time for our whole family.
And that's something we'll get into more next week. But really, if you think about it, this all started with what someone said. This entire thing was implanted and used by the enemy to try to wreck my life. God knew the plans he had for me. I had no intention that I was going to be a minister. I wasn't thinking along those lines. God knew it, and the enemy knew it.
The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy.
That's right. And so what does he do? He uses the anger of a man, an adult man in my seventh grade year, to basically use the power of his tongue to devastate my spirit.
In Proverbs 18:21, it says, death and life are in the power of the tongue.
Yes.
And I think what you've talked about today definitely describes that. It talks mm-hmm. about that, you know, when we talk with somebody, we either can offer them life,
mm-hmm.
life-giving words, or we can sentence them to death.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the verse in Proverbs 15:4 out of the Message Bible. It says, kind words heal and help, cutting words wound and maim.
Yeah.
We need to be mindful of that. Be mindful of your words. Be mindful of what you say, because you have no idea what you say is going to affect someone for the rest of their life.
Very true.
Yes. Well, that's all for this week. Jamie and I wanted to thank you for listening to our podcast today. To learn more about us and our ministry, please visit us at www.holeintheroof.co. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lastly, if you are in need of prayer, we would be honored to pray for you. To reach out to us for any reason or to send us your prayer request, email us at holeintheroofministries@gmail.com. See you all next time as we invite you into our living room and discuss how awesome God is.